Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Iron Mountain, Michigan, and earned a BS in computer science and an MPA in personal and labor relations emphasis from Northern Michigan University. From 1990 to 2018, he held various senior leadership positions at Ford Motor Company and retired as its executive director of human resources for Ford North America. The author of Success Versus Success, The Game of a Lifetime, his name, Rick Popp. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to a fabulous youper, Rick Popp. Grew up in Iron Mountain, Michigan. Rick, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's my pleasure for sure.
Can we start by you offering an opening prayer this evening?
Oh, it'd be my pleasure. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Heavenly Father, you who are all good, all loving, all giving, and always faithful to us, your people, thank you for this day, for the opportunity to be in you and you in us, so that we might in turn be good, loving, and giving because of our faith in you. Thank you for the people you have put in our lives, especially our families and closest friends. Thank you for people like Jack Rasula, who dedicate their time, talent, and treasure to help others, to make this world better, to do your will. Bless our conversation today, Lord, so that it may produce fruit to benefit the listeners of this program and to honor and glorify you. Amen.
That was beautiful. And Heavenly Father, thanks for Rick Popp, making him the way that you made him. So. All right, let's start by talking about your childhood in the UP and your mom and your dad, Rick, please.
Sure. I was born in Lawrence on the Keweenaw Bay, and the Purple Hornets were the basketball football team. My dad was a coach and a teacher, and they actually won the state championship back in the late 60s. When I was about 10 years old, I moved to the big city of Iron Mountain. Now, big city because it had a McDonald's, and the streetlights had three lights. And, you know, sports were a big part of my childhood. It was just a beautiful place. I'll talk more probably as you ask questions today. But, when we moved to Iron Mountain, I was able to just develop and had just a great community around me. And Northern Michigan University became a big part of my life, even from the early days. My dad was an athlete there. And so, you know, those Wildcats were our NBA and our NHL and our NFL, except for the Packers, you know, of course the Packers, but Iron Mountain was that big city for me.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
I was really blessed to have two parents that were very different from each other. My mother introduced me really to Christ and to faith. And even though I drifted, as most young people do, especially through maybe teens and, adolescent years, my mother, I think, gave to me a solid faith foundation and just an enthusiasm and energy, a positive attitude. My dad is known as Sugar Pop. He's legendary in the Upper Peninsula. He's getting a little slow now, and he's in his 80s. Thank God they're both still alive. But Sugar Pop was a character. And he brought a sense of humor and looked for fun in everything that he did, perhaps sometimes a little too much fun, and taught that to me and to my siblings, that never take yourself too seriously. I mean, one of the quotes that he always instilled in us and in challenging us to be the best we can be was to both be humble but also confident. He said, hey, nobody's better than you, but you're no better than anybody else. And I think that's probably his greatest gift to me.
Speaking of legendary in the UP, tell us about Tom Izzo and his boyhood friend, Steve Mariucci.
Great, great people, great role models to this day. They're role models of mine. You know, moving out of your mountain as about a 10-year-old, Tom and Steve are, you know, about 10 years older than me. So they're in their glory days at Northern Michigan University. Tom is the captain of the basketball team. Steve's the captain of the football team. You know, around that time, Northern Michigan won the national championship in Division II football, best in the country. And both being Iron Mountain guys, they are already somewhat legendary in Iron Mountain. And so, yeah, they became role models. They, and as I say, role models at the time was more around sports. And their families were role model families. Steve's youngest brother, Bobby Mariucci, one of my best friends forever. I'm godparent to his kids. He's godparent to mine. And their families, I mean, and Mrs. Mariucci and my mom were real tight. Mr. and Mrs. Izzo, just great people. So supportive. And they were indicative of the type of community that Iron Mountain was. So, I mean, these guys through the years have been role models. They've been given back to Iron Mountain fundraisers every year. They still do it. They come back all the time, whether it's for the big ski jumping tournament or for golf fundraisers. The high school's got a big weight room and the street is named Izzo Mariucci Way. And they're advocates. They're advocates for the UP, for Northern. But it's not so much of their success. I mean, they are good spouses, right? They're good, humble leaders and friends and people of character. And you know, that's what it's all about.
The GOAT of all Youpers, at least in his own mind, is our great mutual friend, Timmy Codd. What impresses you about Timmy Codd?
Well, you know, positive energy. And Tim also, not unlike my dad, just, you know, loves being with people and helping people. And people like Tim, I mean, I you know, I'm biased. You know, I was raised in the Upper Peninsula. You know, I think there's a quality there of genuine good, hardworking people that really do care for others and go out of the way for others. And, you know, there's many people that aren't famous as Izzo Mariucci and even our good friend Tim. You know, others we might talk about later today, but there are the less known, you know, whether they're business leaders or coaches or teachers or firefighters or school administrators or skilled trades. It's that those qualities of hard work and being good, strong people of character, people of faith. I heard a song recently by Chris Young and Kane Brown called Famous Friends. And its song is about famous friends you never heard of. And those classic people that teacher of the year, you know, coach of the year in a small community, but they do it the right way. They win the right way. And the song says, our crowd is second to none. And I feel blessed to have that feeling about my hometown and my, you know, kind of the UP, even though I don't live there all the time.
We're talking to Rick Popp. When we come back, we're going to ask him how it was he got hired by Ford Motor Company. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Rick Popp, who from 1990 to 2018 held various senior leadership positions at Ford Motor Company. Rick, how was it you got hired by Ford in July of 90?
Well, coming out of undergrad, which was a little bit before this, I had a computer science degree. And Jack, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with a computer science degree. I was a good student, thankfully. I loved football, and my life was football. But then I started looking at it. I really don't think I want to be a programmer. I don't want to use that degree. So I thought maybe I'd be a coach. I thought maybe I'd be a teacher, and I was getting a teaching certificate. I was a graduate assistant coach when I was done playing football. I took one class in labor relations that changed everything for me. And then I changed. I got into a master's program focused on labor relations. And so I had two resumes coming out of college, out of grad school. One was looking to be maybe an athletic director track. And the other one was to be in labor relations and work with unions and management union relations. And so I sent those resumes all over. And one from a friend of a friend got it to somebody. And the Dearborn Engine Plant in the Rouge was looking to hire a labor rep. And just had enough, you know, credentials. And again, my grades were good. I had some background and I just wanted to give it a shot. And they gave me a chance. And then the world opened up for me. There's so much more to human resources than that area I was specifically targeting. I loved labor relations, and I'm also thankful that I was able to explore and get into all aspects of human resources over almost 30 years.
Let's jump to 2006. Ford was losing $14 billion a year, almost bankrupt, anemic financial balance sheet, terrible stock performance, weak product lineup, many, many other troubling business conditions. And they hire this guy from Boeing, Alan Mulally. Talk about changing everything. Tell us about Alan Mulally.
Yeah, I just feel blessed to be there during that time. Alan is the best overall, all things considered, best overall business leader I've ever observed and had the honor to work with. But I'll start with the humility of Bill Ford. And that's another person that I'll have utmost respect for forever. And Bill, when he recognized that he wasn't the one at that time for Ford Motor Company to lead the company, he stepped down as the CEO and said, let's bring in Alan, and convinced Alan to join. And man, you're right. Unbelievable. It was, both of these guys are very approachable. They care for people. They lead the right way. And what you see is true. The book, American Icon, very, very close to, right on accurate. And when you see Alan and you hear all, sometimes like, can the guy be that good? I believe it. I mean, he really did. I struggle to think that any one person could really change an entire big behemoth organization. And after that whole experience, one person really can.
Couple stories, if you would, that stand out to you about Alan Mulally.
There are a zillion, but maybe a couple. He was so good at just addressing issues head on, with transparency, but with humility as well. And there was always a kindness around him. So we've repelled, outside bodies coming in. It's hard for a quote outsider. If you didn't raise up in the company, it's just difficult. Now, some have nailed it. The present CEO, Jim Farley, came in from Toyota and he's doing very well, but most struggled. But Alan came in and of course the buzz starts happening because Alan was confident. He made it seem like this is possible, but then you had the buzz around, here he comes from Boeing. Boeing makes maybe a plane a day in a plant, under a plane, one plane a day. These Ford assembly plants are making 2,000 vehicles in one day. They talk about there's 10,000 parts to a car. And he's going to come in and try to put his Boeing mindset on this rapid, high volume, fast pace, complex manufacturing. And Alan picks up on this buzz, and there's a famous quote. It's out there. I'm not the first one sharing this one. But, when he was challenged, a car has 10,000 parts, make 1,000 to 2,000 a day. Alan replied very respectfully, but he said, okay, a plane has between 2 and 4 million parts and it's got to stay in the air. So it was one of these where it's like, let's not get too gung-ho on our vehicles when there's a complexity there, when something has to stay in the air with 2 million to 4 million parts. So that's one. I think he addressed issues, he brought it up, and he did it with facts, and he did it in a very eye-opening way. The first time I met Alan, I was working in Mexico City at the time. I was the head of human resources for Ford of Mexico. We had a conference of all global human resources. We came in together. I had known Alan through being hired and on screen, but I never had really met him personally. So I remember the question that was asked. You hit it. The year that we were going to lose $14 billion, someone had asked him, what keeps you up at night? And in a nutshell, his answer was, nothing. I sleep well. And it kind of made people pause. And he went on to say, I don't worry about worrying. I focus on the plan. And if we fail, it's okay. And that really, wait a minute, you got hundreds of thousands of people relying on success of this company. And he said, but don't get me wrong. We're not going to fail. He said, I believe in the people. So when I say Alan Mulally changed Ford, he had good people that he tapped into. Okay. He said, I believe in the people. I believe in the plan. I don't worry about worrying. I focus on the plan. I'm confident in the plan. And he had this, what he called a can-do, find-a-way attitude and emotional resilience. And he challenged all of us to have the same. So my last point on that story was, I was like, wow, here I'm all frazzled and frustrated and high stress. Here's the CEO, and he's got this calm demeanor because of his focus on the plan. It wasn't like ignorance is bliss. It was, I'm confident in the plan of the people. I'll remember that forever. And that changed the way I led. I stayed away from being a stress monger.
Speaking of stick with the plan and find a way, you were in several negotiations with the United Auto Workers, the UAW. That's duck soup. Talk about those experiences.
Yeah, you know, you think about it, you say, well, what's it like, you know, negotiating with UAW? It's almost, I have an analogy that says, so what's it like being in a relationship? You know, it can be fantastic. It could be a disappointment. It could even be a disaster. You know, your relationships with a significant other. And it could be their fault. It could be your fault. It's probably a little bit of both. And in negotiations or with a union, you don't pick your partner in that. So, you know, I had some awesome experiences, some great people, great union leaders. I subscribe to this phrase, and it almost always is the case, not always, but you get the union you deserve. You know, I believe in unions. I believe in the right for workers to organize. I think they are very powerful, especially in health and safety matters. And you get, as a management, you get the union you deserve. So what I mean by that is, if you have common interests, if you proceed with bargaining, with interest-based bargaining, you become business partners. If you're focused equally on the business and the people, which good management are focused on both, successful people equals successful business, vice versa, then it's a great relationship and you have negotiation. They're still tough. You lose a lot of sleep. Yeah, you get into the nitty-gritty details. It's hard. But on the flip side, if your relationship is political, if the sides are selfish, self-interest, you become bitter adversaries. You know, if you're focused only on the business and that hurts people, or you're focused only on the people that hurts a business, it's an unhealthy relationship. And unfortunately, I did have a couple of those, whether it was in certain plants. But like I said, I was privileged to work with great union leaders in the early days at the Dearborn Engine and Fuel Tank plant. I was out at Romeo Engine plant in the mid-90s, all of powertrain operations in the late 90s. And then the most significant experience in bargaining was through the toughest of times, 06, 07, 08, we were bargaining and reopening the contract. And I was responsible for all of benefits. And we had to cut back on some benefits. We had to really reduce costs. But people like Chuck Browning and Frank Keats from the UAW Ford Division, and then our Ford leaders, you know, in Marty Malloy, Bill Dirksen, these are labor leaders that, like an Alan Mulally, like a Bill Ford, were true people of character. And that made it all not only bearable, but productive and exhilarating and worthwhile.
We're talking to Rick Popp, and he ended a glorious 29-year chapter with Ford Motor Company in 2018. And then in 2020, he wrote a book. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the book. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything's Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Rick Popp. If you want to learn more, www.rickpopp.com. Rick, 2020, you write a book, Success in Quotes versus Success, The Game of a Lifetime. Rick, define success.
Very, very big question. Very profound. Early in the book, I define it in a very simplistic way, you know, achieving an aim or a goal that you set yourself out to be. And early in the book, I talk about, it's targeting young people. And, you know, it's things like, you know, doing your best. It's achieving, whether it's whatever your chosen endeavor, getting some good grades, you know, working, getting a job. If you're in athletics, you know, it's succeeding in athletics. Late in the book, I really get into the question more deeply. And in the success in quotes is essentially what too often the world defines as success. It's about this recognized success, publicity, money, vehicles, homes, kind of this, you show that success. It's what the world wants. And yet it's elusive. It's never enough. It's largely a selfish type of success. I'm not saying it's not good to have success in business, success in money. So that could be part of the success without quotes. But the success without quotes gets more into how you do it. And whether we're talking about being a great teammate or making sure that you're delivering on your promises and how you deal with adversity and how you have this habit of discipline and how you make others better. It's more, in my view, what God defines as success versus the world. You being the best version of yourself versus you being better than somebody else. There's always going to be somebody that is better, makes more, does more, gets recognized more. You know, this definition of success is, without quotes, is failure being part of success, knowing that adversity is coming and how you master adversity, not just get through it. And so I wrote the book because I was asked to speak at a football camp, and it challenged me to say, okay, you've been working for 30 years. You still played a lot of sports when you were young, still coach. What message do you really have for younger people that might resonate with them? And so what I tried to do is help them. The tips in the book, there's eight lessons. There's nine lessons total, but eight are solid that would help you succeed on earth. Number nine is having God as your guide. And it's not only a goal but and a lesson, but it's also an enabler of all the other lessons.
All right. Chapter one, be coachable. And you say that humility is at the core of being coachable. Our great mutual friend, Father John Ricardo, famously says that being humble is not thinking less of yourself, but it's thinking less about yourself. Talk to us about being humble.
No, yeah. And you mentioned Father John Ricardo. I mean, talk about a real, real success role model. You won't measure it by his pocketbook. He comes from, his dad was the former CEO of Chrysler back before Iacocca. And so it's not like he didn't have access to wealth as a young man, but people like him, I mentioned him in my book on a couple of occasions, and he's become a friend and a spiritual role model. That humility around coachability. I wrote the book around, when you're in athletics as a youngster, being coachable and learning that skill early is tremendously important. And at the heart of it is being humble enough to listen to somebody. Even if you don't really think that somebody is somebody that you think is the best coach or somebody who has advice that might be better than yours. It's this humility to say, I might learn from somebody that I might not even respect that much, And so I couldn't believe when I got to the workplace and after years and then through my career, those who had never been coached, those who had never been coached in a way where it wasn't just pats on the back. And now they're in the workplace, whether in their young 20s or even some that are older. And they would melt down when a boss or a colleague would give them some advice. Hey, that one didn't work real well. Hey, you could have done that one better. And instead of that coach, if you've become coachable, preferably when you're young, you just take it. I have coaches in my face and yelling at me, and I didn't like them at the time. And I reflect back, and they helped me become coachable, to set my ego aside and think less about who was saying it, and think more about what they said. And that takes humility.
Chapter three, play your position well. And you tell a beautiful story about President John F. Kennedy visiting NASA in 1961 for the first time.
Yeah, playing your position, after being coachable, being a great teammate, you've got to do your job. And people are counting on you to do your job. And I truly try to impress upon young people that, you are part of a team, and being a teammate is more and more important the older you get. You're more and more on teams than you are individual the older you get. And that doesn't mean, though, that you have to worry about someone else's job. So the story of President Kennedy going into NASA in 1961, he was getting a tour and he saw this guy mopping the floor, and he just, you know, being a, he was such a sociable guy. He, you know, went over to him and said, so what do you do here? And the man answered with enthusiasm, I'm helping to put a man on the moon. And that, and people heard that. And that is a story that I, that resonates with me, because too often we'd say, well, he's just the janitor. I use my mother as an example in the book, who is, you know, quote, just a clerical worker. And she worked up until her late 70s and finally retired. And she approached that job with enthusiasm, and she was helping. And I remember I said, Mom, when are you going to retire? She goes, these guys need me. You know, and she knew that they appreciated her in the office, and she brought more than simply doing the clerical work. And I shouldn't say simply, I'm, you know, guilty of my own warning, but it's that kind of thing. Play your position, no matter what it is, where people are counting on you to play your position, because your position matters in the overall mission of that team, that organization, that family.
We're talking to Rick Popp, wrote a book, Success versus Success. And after 8 chapters, before he starts the final chapter 9, he's got a chapter in there that says, for what? Only a youper would do something like that. When we come back, we're going to ask him why. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible. Anything is possible. 15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible. And we're talking to Rick Popp. Since 2019, he's been the managing partner of Unleash Popp, LLC. I don't know if his kids ever say Unleash Popp, but that's another show. If you want to learn more, www.rickpopp.com. Okay, youper. You got 8 chapters, and then you put this thing in before the last chapter. It's called For What? Why?
Well, I forgot to put it in early. No, I, 2 reasons. One is impact. And the second is it's how we think. As people have read the book and you go through lesson by lesson, you get people that, yes, this is good. You know, it is a good lesson on how I can be more successful, real success without quotes. In my, whether I'm doing my sports or in my career, in my family, in life in general. And so often we don't stop to think about why. So often we don't stop to think about why. Why am I doing it? For what? So I could do all this stuff, work so hard. And so before I got into lesson 9, which is God is your guide, it helped me to pause and give people that, hey, you can work your tail off, and if you're not reflecting on for what, what's the bigger reason for why you do what you do, whatever you do, you know, there's very few rights and wrongs in what chosen profession you take. But that's how we think. We forget about the why. So it was this reminder of ask your question for what and be comfortable with your answer. You know, your answer is your answer. You've got to ask it and be comfortable. And then I get into the last chapter. So I did not forget on that one, Jack.
Okay, let's go to the last chapter. God as your guide.
you know, in that for what chapter, and you mentioned Father John Ricardo, I remember getting, you know, toward the latter part of my career. And I had always in my mind thought that I wanted to, you know, retire as soon as I could from a large company. And I ended up staying with Ford for all that time. And I had that opportunity. And I remember there was a couple of years before I had that chance. And I was in a talk, a homily from Father John, and he was talking about the beautiful environment we lived. I was in Northville, Michigan. My parish was in Plymouth, Michigan, just a great environment. And Father John was talking about how blessed we all are, the careers and the homes and the vehicles and the, you know, all this, you know, perceived success. And then he turned and talked about, then why is there so much misery? Why do I have people come to me with broken marriages, broken families? Why do I have people with stress and health issues? And why? And he challenged this for what? Now, when I was first listening to it, I was thinking it's for other people. You know, I'm sitting and saying, yeah, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about myself, good about my family. It's for other people. And when he challenged me with the for what, it challenged me to think more deeply. And it took me, I've always been a faith-based person, but it wasn't the driver of my life. It wasn't the driver. When you say, what's your Lord, you know, in the classic terminology of your Lord, whether it's the kingship, yes, my Lord, and that drives your decisions. You behave according to what your Lord is. Is your Lord your career? You know, is your Lord your hobby? Is your Lord your desire to be famous and publicity? What is it? What is your Lord? And I'm convinced of this, but it's for people to read and make their own decisions. People can read lesson 1 through 8 and agree with all of it, but then say, but if I'm going to go all in for Jesus Christ, or if I'm going to orient my life, not to be largely influenced by, or quote, God is a big part of my life, but the driver of my life. And in my estimation, my view, my experience, if you don't go there, you'll have a hole in your heart and in your joy, your deep, profound joy, even during very, very tough times. And God willing that I can stay in Christ in this way so that during tough times, there is that profound joy. And to me, that was the missing link. And man, in the last few years, I'm just so thankful for Father John and the people around me that have, you know, strengthened that. And especially my wife, Sue, and my sons, just, it's been so that's what goes into lesson 9, Jack. Each lesson can stand on its own, but my conclusion on the book is that if you're not choosing that one, I think you'll always have a hole.
Since 2019, you've been the managing partner of Unleashed Pop, POPP LLC. Talk to us, and what Unleashed Pop does is help organizations, teams, individuals unleash their full potential to perform better and enjoy work and life more. Talk to us about culture, and how do you propagate culture throughout the organization?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of what Alan Mulally was able to do at Ford, you know, influenced my perspective here. And then what I've been doing with other companies since then. And obviously, with being in human resources, I study this stuff. My kids call me an HR nerd. And so I just love, you know, studying and researching and asking people about culture. So I'll give you a few thoughts. First, any organization has got to define the culture they want and the culture they need. You've got to define it. If you go with this, as Zig Ziglar would call it, this wandering generality, you'll run into dysfunctionality, and then you'll look and you won't even know what to compare it against. So it's being as specific as you can about who are you and who aren't you? How do you treat each other? And how don't you treat each other? And a culture for a successful company has got to be aligned with the business strategy. It's got to matter to the people in that organization based on real data, not just what you think they think or want. And it's got to be able to provide a competitive advantage. If you can nail that and define a culture that nails that, now you get something to start with. Okay, once you start with that, now every process must reinforce that desired culture. Every process, your performance management, the way you pay people, the way you hire people, the way you release people, your physical structures, what's on the wall, what you talk about, what words you use, what words you don't use, okay? Everything has to reinforce that culture. And then you need to frequently assess it, think about it, look at it. Some are measurable results, whether it's employee surveys or whether it's, you know, other indicators. People, are the right people staying with the company? Are the wrong people leaving the company or vice versa? And then lastly, I'm really big, you publicly praise when there's reinforcing behaviors and reinforcing structures, and you privately address. And that includes you privately address things that aren't working out and removing people. When Alan Mulally respectfully removed some of the best leaders, smartest people, I wouldn't say best leaders, but some of the smartest people, that reinforced a culture that says you could be the greatest star athlete. And if you're not, you know, building that team and working together, you're not part of this culture. And the last thing I'll mention, I remember, I think it was Netflix, that they talked about how they manage culture back when they were first starting. And they had one that said generous separation packages. So they would buy people out and they would say, hey, we're going to give you a lot of money. You know, you could succeed somewhere else. Fine. You just don't fit our culture. And they do it in a way that respectful and the person isn't hung out to dry, but it was real clear what was in and what was out. So those are some thoughts, Jack. I hope they provide a little help to somebody.
As we come to the final minute of the show, what advice would you give our young listeners tonight, Rick?
You know, I first I'd say read the book. I'd say, you know, take a look. There's so many lessons in here I gave some thought to. But if I, maybe I succinctly say this, is as you're looking to be the best version of yourself, be balanced in that approach. It's physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And spiritual is not only an enabler to all that, it's also an end goal. You find your spiritual clarity. It enables everything else, and it is an end goal. Secondly, I'd say develop an attitude of gratitude. Always be thankful. We've been blessed with so much, even during tough times. Even be thankful of our tough times. And lastly, be focused on others. When you realize that the entire world's population, the entire world population, with one minor exception, consists of other people, and you embrace that and live a life that helps other people, then I think in doing these, you'll glorify God who has given you everything.
Rick Pop, you are a shining example of walking your talk.
Oh,
thanks
thank
much.
You.
Keep up the great, great work.
You too, Jack. It's really been an honor, and I'm just blessed to be able to be associated with people like you, Jack. Thank you so much.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.